Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show. Hello, and welcome back to The Obvious Choice podcast. I'm here with Ari Mizell, and Ari is a productivity expert, really, and his book, Less Doing, was something that I read a long time ago. Now, Ari, you don't know this story, but I got married in 2016. My first son was born in 2017. Your book came out in 2016. I started looking very deeply when I got married, when I knew I was going to have my first child, of how to become more replaceable myself, how to productize my services much better, and how to build, in your words, an external brain. And my wife still says the number one thing that she's most grateful for before we had our first child was just how much time and effort I put into becoming much better at this stuff so that I could be there more for my family. Because as an entrepreneur, I just did it all myself. Well, here's why I want to have you on the podcast right now. My third child is due to be born in a month and a half. Teach me my Yoda. Good to have you on, man.
Oh, wow. Thank you, man. That's so nice. Those are the stories that make it like so worthwhile. I really appreciate that. I have five kids now, so I put it to the test. As long as I stay ahead of the other people, I can keep saying like I've tried it this way.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, just how much I learn and how much it is completely reinforced into me over and over and over again that constraints are very, very useful. That actually the less time we have, almost the better than we become. There's a pattern that I've established amongst some of the most successful like CEOs, not necessarily the loudest. I mean, the loudest people are often the people with no families, but like the most successful CEOs, almost across the board, they have kids. And I kind of wonder whether that constraint and forced focus and forced prioritization of having a family and having that important kind of makes them so much better at some of these more important business operational things like prioritization. Have you recognized any pattern like that?
Yeah, so there's two ways of looking at this, right? So one is 100%. Restrictions, in my mind, restrictions breed innovation, right? And I always love to give the MacGyver example, right? But MacGyver always, you know, he had like a paperclip and a box of Bisquick and he had to escape from a maximum security prison, right?
Yeah.
Nobody ever gave him like a box of tools, right? So oftentimes it's with less that we are able to achieve more. Same thing with money. You know, I think that we've seen this over decades, multiple decades now. You know, a lot of businesses get killed by getting too much money, raising too much money, right? So there's definitely that side of it, the restrictions sort of breeding the innovation. But there's another way of approaching that, right? And so it's like the weighted bat. It's the example of the weighted bat, right? So, you know, with baseball players, right, a lot of times you see them on the side with the weights on the bats. They're swinging the bats, right? And then they take them off and they go and swing.
Right.
So I see kids that way a little bit, right? And so biohacking is a really big part of my sort of background and sort of how I got into this world in the first place, because I had been diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And I've done all sorts of things to optimize my life and working out and stress and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But and my sleep is pretty bad. It always has been by objective standards.
Yeah.
Right. So we have, my youngest is 23 months old. We have two dogs, three cats. I'm also a volunteer EMT and I work an overnight shift once a week.
Okay.
So my sleep is very shitty, but the fact that I can fall, my sleep efficiency is incredible, right? So if you look at all like the Aura Ring and all that stuff, like if you give me 20 minutes, I can get 18 minutes of sleep any time of day. And so the point though is that like sometimes, oftentimes, we have to make things actually harder on ourselves, more difficult, so that we can then sort of like level set for the things that happen in our everyday life. So if I can operate with suboptimal sleep and not mentally be like, oh my God, I had a bad night of sleep last night, so today's going to be awful, which a lot of people do. And then you also get, like, especially the people, I think, who don't have families, is there's this all or nothing mentality, right? So the really popular thing on social media right now is these morning routines and, like, Ashton Hall at 3:30 in the morning, right? Like, I can't wait till that guy has a kid someday and, like, well, sure, you know, right? But does that mean that his life has to crumble and he can't be successful anymore? No, of course not. We have to adapt and we have to grow from that. So, and the last thing I'll say on that, I know that's like, I'm like rambling now, but when most of the time when people tell me they don't have enough time, and you know, in what I do, this is, I hear that all the time from people. My response typically when I look at what they're actually spending their time on is, no, you have too much time.
Yeah.
And you're not spending it effectively. Like, I'll show you what it means to not have enough time.
Right. Five kids, five animals, and an overnight shift.
Yeah.
You have too much time. You don't have not enough time.
And I'll show you every time the person that says that, like, that's the truth.
What are people doing to fill their time then?
So, and the interesting thing, I'll answer your question, but like the interesting thing about that is that if you ever notice really effective people, really, really effective people, whatever you want, entrepreneurs, soldiers, whoever you want to talk about, like really effective people, you're never going to hear them say like, oh, I'm so busy, I don't have time. It's that's just not the way they look at it. So they're filling the time with a lot of times. I mean, you could, there's distractions, there's social media, there's all sorts of stuff, but like just the work itself, there's, you know, it always sounds like a joke when people talk about it, but the, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the principle, not Pareto's principle. Parkinson's. Thank you. Jeez. I've literally said that term like 75,000 times in my life. I can't believe I just forgot that. Work expands to fill the time allowed to complete it. Right. So
yes, sir.
You know, you just emailed me before we started and you said you needed an extra 15 minutes to get ready. I just got two things done in that 15 minutes that I had not intended on doing that I was going to do after. Right. So you give me a deadline, you give me a shorter amount of time and I will get it done. And ultimately, the more and more you shorten it, two things happen. Either you have to start sacrificing quality and start recognizing that perfect is the enemy of done.
Yeah.
Right. Or you have to recognize that there is no possible way that you can do certain things. And those certain things still have to get done. Now, who or what is going to do them for you?
I always used to tell people, the most efficient that you'll ever be, the most effective that you'll ever be, is when you pick up your laptop and you go to a coffee shop with your battery half full without your charger.
Absolutely. Burn the bridges.
Like, if you honestly think that you don't have enough time, pay attention to how much you get done once your computer gives you a notice that says you've got 10% charge left and you don't have your charger. Ooh, you get a lot done real freaking fast, man. So can you create those constraints?
Yes, absolutely. That's the big thing. That's the big one. So sort of the genesis for all the stuff that I do and less doing and everything came from originally this journey with Crohn's
disease. Less doing is fabulous book that you wrote, by the way, for anybody just to really call that out. Less doing.
Less doing, more living was the first one. I think the one you're talking about in 2016 was The Art of Less Doing, which was the update.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I
remember Less Doing. I don't remember the rest of it. I just remember Less Doing.
That's totally fine. Yeah. And anyway, so I was working these like 18-hour days in construction, then I got sick. And I was presented with this very real scenario where I could barely do an hour of work in a given day. And so that question of what would you do if you only work an hour a day is a really big part of everything that's come from that. And it's something I like to ask coaching clients a lot of times because, you know, just like I said, you can't get everything done in an hour. So you really have to be laser focused on what you can and the things that you can't but still have to get done. You have to start creating systems and processes using automation, tools, and ultimately delegating and letting go of stuff. But so yeah, you can create those restrictions. So you'll tell somebody, I would always tell somebody, you know, this project's going to cost $1,000 or $10,000, whatever it is. Plan out, like, look at what would you have to do if it was 5,000, right? If you only had 5,000, you know, this project's going to take 2 weeks. What if you only had a week?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting sort of thought experiment.
A couple friends of mine did that. Casey Sasek and Molly Galbraith, they run a company called Girls Gone Strong, and I remember they were coming out with a certification years back. We were living with them at the time, my now wife, and them were living together. We kind of parallel businesses, so it worked well, and we compared a lot of notes, right? And one of the questions they asked and they challenged their team with is they said, okay, you say that this is going to take us 9 months to develop. Let's do it in 3. And I think they ended up getting it done in 5.
Yeah.
And it was that question of, I love that question of, like, let's actually bring this to such an insane, like, almost unbearably intense state.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that it's probably not going to end up there. But that, to me, is the art of iteration and course correction. It's not a 10,000-hour rule, is it? It's a 10,000 iteration rule. I mean, that's not an exact number, but that's what we're going for. Can you do something where you rip away as much as possible? Too much. And then you kind of add back in as you see fit, as opposed to continually adding and trying to, like, correct along the way. Is that your process? My process. That's your process.
Yeah. Well, all right. And because the thing is, too, is, like, if you're adding on to sort of, like, the wrong direction or so this is what I usually say. I always say, like, technology amplifies habits, right? So if you have good habits, it's going to make them better. And if you have bad habits, it's going to make them significantly worse, significantly faster, right? So that's why I love like when. It's a big thing with coaching clients when it's like, well, I heard about this really cool tool. Should I, you know, use this tool in my company? It's like, no, you need to get the processes figured out first or the systems, because all this tool is going to do is make everybody's life, like, further into the void, you know?
It's going to speed up the process that's already going on, whatever that process is. Which means it will get you either closer to or further away from whatever your good is. Something that you said is productivity systems. Something that you help build is productivity systems that exceed somebody's existing infrastructure.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so that's overwhelm, or the kind of overwhelm that I often deal with is where you have entrepreneurs who are... I've worked with all sorts of companies, all sorts of levels, but I'd say for the most part, the entrepreneurs I work with today are entrepreneurs who are successful. They've already become successful. And now they have opportunity in excess of what their infrastructure will support. And more often than not, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they are the bottleneck. They are the limiting factor.
Yeah.
And so getting out of the way and being more replaceable, which is that's what I talk about all the time, is being replaceable, is really the key.
What do you mean when you say infrastructure? What does that word mean to you?
Well, so it's a good question, because I think it means something very different today than it did 6 months ago, even. You know,
1 month ago.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, it's so fascinating to see. So, outsourcing used to be delegating used to be a really, really big part. I mean, it still is, but it was like a very foundational part of what I used to be doing. And over the last, you know, decade and a half, I've probably spent, you know, a couple $100,000 on outsourcing providers, virtual assistants, coders, you know, everything, and have outsourced tens of thousands of hours of work. And I have not had any team members or a VA or anything in well over almost 2 years now. And a lot of that is because of AI. ChatGPT is, like, pretty much doing everything for me, you know, except making the final purchase. And now with Operator, you can do that anyway. So, I only outsource things that are very, very, like, specific, very niche kind of stuff nowadays. And that's probably once or twice a month to someone on Fiverr. So, that's one of the things, but I have to have those systems in place and that infrastructure, right?
I outsource taste where I don't have taste. That's how I define it. I outsource taste. I feel like I have taste in a number of things. For example, I'm outsourcing illustrations to make my content pop because I can write, and I feel like that's what I do really, really well. What I cannot do, or what I don't have that fine taste for, is figuring out how to illustrate that writing in the new media, which is social media. That to me is a very fine taste that others have that I don't. And so I can outsource that, and I'm willing to pay a fair amount of that to somebody with that level of taste at the highest level. Whereas, like, synthesizing, for example, my next book, I'm adding chapter summary at the end, you know, 3 to 5 bullet points. No way in hell I'm outsourcing that to a copywriter or a ghostwriter like that. I use Claude for writing, but, like, same thing. I mean, I feed my chapter into it. I give it prompts. I iterate on those prompts a little bit based off of the feedback. And then I just feed each chapter. And I'm like, give me these bullet points. Cool. What's the best? What's the worst? How can we make the worst better? Done. Move on. But taste is what I'm looking at.
I got to tell you something, John.
What's that?
That is maybe one of the – that is possibly the best articulation of that I think I've heard in my entire career. and it's very in line with what I tell people often. It's like if you – the problem with so everybody's had a bad experience outsourcing something, and most of the time, well, so this is funny. So every time I used to give a talk in person, I always loved asking this because it was just amusing. I'd be like, everybody, you know, raise your hand if you've ever outsourced something before, and you know, like half the room would raise their hand, and then I'd say, all right, now raise your hand if you've ever had a bad experience outsourcing something, and literally every time more people would raise their hands than had initially raised their hands. I was like, okay, so just to be clear, more of you had a bad experience than those of you who have actually outsourced something. And it's like, yeah, because most people are really bad at communicating what they want done. They're very bad at communicating what success looks like. And a lot of people outsource with this expectation that this person they're giving it to, who has less information, less context, and less experience, is going to produce a superior result to you.
Right.
So what you just said there is absolutely brilliant. And something that AI cannot replace ultimately, right? I don't believe is that that sense of human taste. It can supplement it and, you know,
and synthesize it.
And it can synthesize it. That was brilliant.
That was something that we found out a long time ago when we started helping personal trainers and online trainers and coaches try to find virtual assistants. We did a lot of work with them back in the day to help them. And overwhelmingly, people are like, oh, I can't find anybody good. I can't find anybody good. It's like, no, no, no. Man, you leave your house in the morning and you meet an asshole. It's like, yeah, you might have met an asshole. You walk a little bit longer, right? And you go to the coffee shop and you meet another asshole. It's like, I got bad news for you, bro. You are the one who's an asshole. Like, the problem is not the 4 virtual assistants that you brought on.
Right.
That they weren't good enough. Hey, real quick, I wanted to invite you to buy a copy of my new book. It's called The Obvious Choice. And instead of me telling you about how good it is, what I'm going to do is just read a couple of the endorsements of others. So the first is from Jason Pfeiffer. He's the editor-in-chief for Entrepreneur Magazine. So you can imagine this guy has seen a lot of business books. Here's what he said about The Obvious Choice. He said, if you want to win in business without feeling like you have to win the internet, get this book. It can help any marketer, small business owner, and entrepreneur. Okay, here's another one from Harley Finkelstein. He is actually the president of Shopify. Again, if you want to find somebody who knows how to sell stuff, particularly sell stuff online, but really anywhere, like somebody who is the president of Shopify probably knows what he's talking about. So here's what he said. He said, consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. Every entrepreneur is going to get actionable takeaways from this read. If you're selling something, you need this book in your life. Trust me, you won't regret it. There's more endorsements you'll find on the Amazon page. Those aren't the only two, of course, but I'll stop there. Please go and buy a copy of the book. It's in hardcover. It's in Kindle. It's in audio. On Amazon, wherever you find books, hope that you absolutely love it. So you talk about the 3 most important needs of building this external brain. I'd love to know if this is still what you think is the most important with just how fast things are moving. I actually wrote a tweet this morning that said, I have gotten to the point where I feel the need to tell the AI that I'm working with that it's time for breakfast and I'll be back later, and I'm not quite sure how I feel about that. Like, that's how quickly these become humans in our lives. But you talked about communication, project management, and documentation. Do you still feel like those are the most important three elements of having an external brain, or has that changed?
No, definitely. So I'd say communication is 80% of the problem in most businesses. And not like what you say, but really how that's delivered and organized. Email is a terrible tool for internal communication, as an example.
Okay.
But then, yeah, project management and then processes.
So let's double tap on communication then, if you say it's 80%. From what you said before, you talked about the intentions or desired outcomes is really important. Would that be number one? Where would that be on your list? And how would you tackle that?
So you have to be really intentional about the systems you use. So what happens in most companies is they're using a whole mix of tools, right? It could be Slack and email and texting and voicemails, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just kind of uses whatever they want, whatever's most comfortable with them. And oftentimes they'll use most of those tools, right? So somebody sends a Slack message, the person doesn't get back to them. Now they text them, they don't get back to them. Now they call them. Because, people want what they want. And the thing
stop
is...
Turning, that stop twisting the knife. Go on.
urgency is very perspective-based, right? It's very subjective. And what's urgent to one person is very, very rarely urgent to another person. And so people will act in a way using communication tools in a way that no one ever taught them how to do.
Yeah.
And it's literally like it's like taking a pillow up to your roof and like cutting it and just letting the feathers fly out in the air. Like that's like what a lot of communication is. And maybe one of those will get to somebody. I don't know. But you can't take it back. You can't like track anything. So it's really about being very intentional about the tools that we use and what we use them for. And we divide that into synchronous and asynchronous, urgent and non-urgent.
Tell me what synchronous and asynchronous is.
So what we're doing right now, right, that's synchronous. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I extremely limit in my life and my day. And it's one of the – if there was ever a silver bullet in productivity, it would be asynchronous communication. So I would say 99% of my communication is done asynchronously, meaning not live. Now, a lot of you are using asynchronous tools right now, but you're not using them as asynchronous tools. So email is an asynchronous tool.
Yeah.
Most people that I see have a second screen over here with their email up all the time, and it's just pinging them whenever somebody wants to get a hold of them. I use a tool called Voxer primarily. I'm sure you're familiar with Voxer.
Yep. We started using it with some of our coaching. We don't anymore because we don't do that coaching anymore. But after you talked about how you use it exclusively in your coaching, we started using it in our coaching as well. So tell me what Voxer is. Tell me how you use it.
Yeah, so Voxer is primarily a voice communication tool. The user experience is very similar to like the old Nextel, click, click, or chirp, chirp phones. But if you're not there, of course, somebody can listen to it later. And the point is that you can send a message with the understanding that the person will get to it when they can, they will listen to it, and they will respond when they can. And if you set up a culture like that, you're telling people that I want you to communicate when you're at your best. Now, for me, as a coach, for the last 5 years, I have done all of my coaching exclusively over Voxer. So,
and who do you coach?
So, for the most part, I coach entrepreneurs who have already achieved some success. Usually, their businesses are in the $3 to $25 million revenue range. Every industry imaginable. I couldn't pinpoint a group of industries. And I'm able to coach almost 24 clients in 17 time zones with unlimited one-on-one access to me. And I spend about 20 minutes a day doing that. That's it. Because there's no workshops, there's no Zoom calls, there's no phone calls. They Vox me when they want. And I get back to them usually in pretty short order. But it allows for the space for me to process, for them to process, and also for them to sort of let things out in the moment when things happen in their business.
Yeah. I think that's so powerful that there's the mutual understanding from day one that that's the case, we put something, I mean, so much of this is the result of your work, without me telling you until now, which is actually something that I need to get better at. So I'll say thank you now and that I'm grateful for you. And I haven't said that up until now, and I really should have. Because I know, as a fellow guy on the internet, you know, it's kind of a black hole. And you know, when you hope that a lot of people are hopefully benefiting from what you do and what you say and how you help them, but you don't hear from them most of the time. And I guess that I'm guilty of that too, and I'm kind of a jerk for that. But one of the things that we implemented across my company are accenting levels of emergency. You know, like, we use Slack across our company, but we generally use that for things like, we share wins amongst the people that we work with. We show general announcements. There's not actually that much more than that. But then everybody has the phone number of the people that they need. And we say, text messages are emergency. You are not expected to answer your email right away. You are not expected to have Slack open all the time. If there is something that is an emergency, is defined by A, B, C, D, you send a text message. I get like 2 text messages a year.
Yeah.
Right? Because we all kind of know that it's not. But what that allows us to do is it allows us to categorize then messaging. And, you know, what's an emergency? It's like, oh, our software platform's down and, you know, 10,000 plus people. Like, all right, we got to deal with this quick.
Yeah. Well, and good for you for setting that, you know, making that clear, because otherwise nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the communication bit.
That's a lot of it. I mean, there's also part of the communication teaching, which is about different levels. I have this thing I teach called the 6 levels of delegation. And then also the 3 decisions, which is kind of an inbox zero strategy, but it's more like how we make decisions in general. But the thing is that otherwise what happens is, and I always see this, you have this divide between the CEO type and the COO type, right? The operator versus the visionary. And the visionary can just drive people nuts and drive teams nuts. And what I always say is, you know, you get into the scenario where it's like, it's LIFO, which is, you know, an old accounting term, last in, first out. Basically, the team gets in this habit where the last thing you told them was the big idea, the big important thing, is the next thing that they work on. And then nothing ever gets done and deadlines get mixed. And, you know, we see that when, like, the entrepreneur goes to the conference and hears the 3 other people talk about this new software platform and this new thing they're doing, and they come back like, this is what we're doing now. And it kills the team.
So how do you get over that as the person who runs the business, whether you have a big team or a small team? How do you get over that? Because I've certainly fallen guilty of that.
Me too.
Where you attend an event and something happens, and or there's so much, I call it like business porn, productivity porn, where, you know, there are some very charismatic, persuasive individuals. And it's to the point where I actually can't consume their content anymore. Because despite the knowledge that there's benefit to their content, they are so persuasive that they will make me believe that things that I know are not as important as what I'm doing are more important than what I'm doing, to the point where I can't even consume the information. So how do we mitigate this as the leader of our company? Do we sit there with a book that's like a black book that's like ideas, the idea graveyard? It's like, I just need to get it down, and you don't show it to anybody. Like, what do you do?
So not, well, the right category, but not the right idea. Right. So that's really the external, that's where the external brain really comes into this. So,
okay.
One of the things that I teach people really religiously is that we have to have an idea capture system. Right. Mm. Notebook is not it for most people, because as you said, it's the idea graveyard. Now, I never want people to be more than 20 seconds away from being able to capture an idea. And most importantly, you have to have a system set up so that those ideas go to a central place that they can be sorted. So what does that mean?
Okay.
So I've got, you know, by the way, I don't have a computer. This is my son's gaming computer. I do not, everything I do is from my phone. I don't have a computer. Talk about restraints, right? Restrictions.
Right.
So we have a Alexa device. I had to mute her so she wouldn't respond.
Yeah.
In every room of the house, if I take a screenshot on my phone, that'll be something I can send a text to a particular number. I can call a number and leave a voicemail. I can do what. So I have about, I'd say, 16 different things where I can capture an idea, and every one of those ideas will go and become a new card in Trello. I love Trello, and that's
so you
what
use Trello to organize. Okay,
I use Trello, okay. And the important thing to recognize here is that the brain and the mindset that you're in when you come up with an idea is not the same as the brain and mindset you're in when you sort those ideas and sort of subjectively look at them. Definitely not the same one as the execution brain. The ancient Greeks used to say you should always think of an idea twice: once when you're sober and once when you're drunk, right? And if they match up, then you're good. Probably in the reverse order.
I actually wrote sober and edited drunk for my last book, and it worked out pretty good.
That's fine.
That's fine. Stop overthinking this shit. It's fine.
But yeah, so that's and so.
So what are your boards in Trello? What are your boards in Trello? So I imagine everything that gets sent there from your phone, from Alexa or whatever, just goes into like an initial like idea dump.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a brain dump column.
Yes.
And then I have my sorting phase, which is, you know, like 9 o'clock at night. That's sort of like my night routine, as I'll go and I'll look at the 7 or 8 things that I got from the day. So then I can say like, all right, this is something that I wanted to show my wife and buy on Amazon. Great. This is something that I would have sent to a VA when I had a VA, right? So they can order that or look into that. This is an article I want to read. I'm a very poor reader. I get very distracted when I read. I'm very audiovisual, so now I'll just have articles get turned into podcasts, basically, for me. So you can just forward them and have that. But then it's like,
so you just forward it and it just reads it for you.
So there's a tool called Narrow, NARRO, and then there's also 11 Labs has one. But basically, you get like a customized podcast feed, and you just forward articles to it, and then it's on your Spotify, basically.
Cool. And then you go for a walk and you listen to it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Cool. And then like, okay, now this is a really groundbreaking idea that I want to talk to my COO about. For that, then I have another process, which is called the 3 W's, which is basically where I have to kind of make my case for the idea and then give it to, at the time, I don't have a COO now because I'm lean and mean, but when I did, then I would give it to her and she would then fill out the other parts of it, and we'd sort of like come to this meeting of the minds on the idea. So you need a process, and people need to know that there's a process. So it's not just like, I got a great idea, let's spend the next 2 weeks working on it.
What I like about that a lot, thinking through my own life, is the freedom to be present with the people that you love when you're with them. I think anybody who runs a business can attest that your brain's always going a mile a minute, and you see something or you come across something, but you're with your kids or you're with your wife or whatever, and you're like, oh, I want to be with them, but I can't stop thinking about this thing. And even so much as figuring out where to sort it becomes an issue. And so what I like about what you do is you're just like, just throw it over there. And I know that I'm going to sort it and put it where I need to, but then you almost have this factory line sortment process, where there's a time to process everything at once, and your brain. You ever come across Dr. Gloria Mark's work with attention span?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, she talks about mental schemas, right? And how your brain brings up different blueprints, and that way you're in the same mental schema for sorting these tasks all at once. You're not flipping back and forth. I could see how that would reduce a lot of brain fog as well.
Yeah, I mean, the best that we can do to focus on one thing for even 15 minutes without having to flip-flop around, that's really helpful. It's really, really useful. It doesn't have to be like for an hour and a half, but even 15 minutes on one thing is helpful. Now, there are times when getting a lot of little things done is really good too, and you can get really jazzed up doing that and bang a bunch of stuff out. You have to understand, like, there are different times of day, and everybody's different, right? There are different times of day where you do different kinds of things well and not so well. And I'm sure you know this with fitness, right? There's some people are really good morning workout people. Some people, the idea of getting up early to work out is like death.
Yeah. Okay. And then last thing, when you're sorting this, Do you have different columns then in Trello that you move stuff to as you're sorting it, or does it get moved to different places depending on what it is, and how do you identify what those? Because I imagine that this is almost a funnel type system. You go from very wide to increasingly more deep. So how do you how do you manage that?
So I have my personal board, and that's just literally, it's like brain dump and then to do, doing, done. Right. So if something is a real idea, then it's going to go to to do. And then I can, like, then I can attack it, knowing that that's something that's on deck that I need to actually work on and want to work on. If it's something, and again, this is, I haven't had a team around me in a few years now of my own, but in that situation where it was like, this is a great idea, I have the to do for me is to basically present this to my COO, and then I wouldn't touch the company board. Then she could take it and bring it over to the company board, and that was off limits to me by design, right? So you have to set up those parameters. And again, it's not just about having the system. It's about people knowing that there's a system in place. Because as you said about being present, right, the fact that I can capture an idea and I feel confident and safe knowing that it's somewhere that I can get to it and I will come back to it. Because the problem with the notebook, right, the graveyard of ideas is like you're going to wake up in the middle of the night at some point and be like, wait, what was that? What was that idea? And then, oh, shoot, what did I do with that? You know, like, and
which notebook really did I put it in? That's my question.
Right. And that's really stressful.
And I dwell on it. I mean, I'm awful at this, which is why I think I'm going to adopt this Trello board. And I appreciate you bringing it up because I email stuff to myself. I just send myself emails. And I'm like, I'll just deal with that later. But then my email is just a mess.
Yeah.
And so I like this idea of the Trello board. What I don't like is keeping Amazon Alexa speakers in every room of my house. I'm the kind of guy who, we had one at one point, and I picked up that thing and I walked outside and I threw it in the garbage one day because I just don't want that shit in my house. So I'll have to figure out something else for that. Ari, this has been wonderful, man. This has been super helpful for me, selfishly. And I'm glad that I had an opportunity to thank you for, you know, the help that you...
Yeah, me too.
Gave me before my first kid, and now approaching my third as I'm just trying to get better and better and better at this. Lessdoing.com is your website. If people want to talk to you about your coaching, though, what's the best way to get in touch with you about that?
Voxer. So they can actually go to voxwithari.com. VOXWITHARI.com.
Cool. Voxwithari.com. Very cool. Love it. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, John.
Got it.